Hello and welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here we discuss some real news. Would Trump really be able to bring the conflict in Ukraine to an end, given the forces arrayed against him? Trump says he would end the conflict before being inaugurated. What would his deal look like? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube in Locals. And in Marrakesh, we have Martin Jay. He is an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. Well, it's becoming real, George. I mean, you know, we've heard Trump say throughout the campaign that he would end the conflict in Ukraine in 24 hours. He's even given a caveat recently before he was inaugurated if he is victorious in November. In looking at the convention, there hasn't been a lot of commentary about who wasn't there. And a lot of the old neocons, very well-known individuals, Liz Cheney, Bill Kristol, Paul Ryan, and many, many others, Mike Pence, they weren't there. J.D. Vance was there, but Mike Pompeo was there as well. I think you get my drift here. You know, Trump is, his election prospects are looking good. And so we have to think hard about the reality that he may inherit this war that Biden started.
Well, that's exactly right. And Trump has been quite skillful in maintaining an ambiguity as to, well, in the first place, what exactly America First really means. But in the second place, how he will resolve this problem in Ukraine, because, of course, yes, there are other people like J.D. Vance. They take it to mean America First. We focus on America's problems. We don't waste our resources on peripheral issues such as Ukraine. But there are others who were there, such as powerful congressional chairman like Michael McCaul. And their idea of America First is, well, we go in and we, unlike Biden, give Ukraine the tools to finish the job. So that is that, what Trump will do is very different from what Biden will do. He will actually help Ukraine win this war. Well, that's completely the opposite of what Trump has been saying. So Trump has been gliding by without having to exactly spell out. I mean, there have been various papers written by people associated with the American First Policy Institute, like I think Frederick Flights and Keith Kellogg. But Trump has never endorsed any of those plans. So yes, he says he's going to end this in 24 hours, but he's never really given us an idea of how exactly that will be accomplished or what exactly that final kind of ending of the war will look like.
Yeah. Martin, I think it was on Friday that Trump had a conversation with the now illegitimate president of Ukraine, Zelensky. And the readout from both sides was kind of boilerplate. I mean, it was an excellent, perfect telephone call, as Trump likes to say. They made it sound like there was a lot of agreement, but nothing was specified. No details were specified. For example, endorsing the China proposal or a Pan-African proposal or reacting to what Putin has said repeatedly about how negotiations could start. No details were given, except that they were in agreement. That's not encouraging.
Well, they were in agreement to the idea of Trump waving his magic wand and creating a solution for everyone, including Zelensky, but nothing further than that. No details, because I don't think Trump has any details at this point. I think if you're in Zelensky's position, probably you're very wary of Trump. It's a little bit like shaking hands with the devil. You know, one minute Trump can be your friend, the next minute he can be your biggest enemy if you just don't react the way he always needs you to react all the time and respect his particular requirements, whether it comes to media or whatever. So I think probably Zelensky is treading very, very carefully. I mean, it's interesting that they had a conversation because, you know, everybody is now just assuming that we're going to have Trump in the White House, and he's now going to have to live up to this declaration he made a long time ago that he's going to fix Ukraine in 24 hours. And nobody actually really believes that. You know, and the Russians have been taking a very sober approach to it. I think the official statement was, look, that's not very realistic, you know, and Trump made a statement before about fixing the Middle East when he was president. And in fact, you know, it's sort of hacks like me who actually look at the Middle East and say, well, actually, if you hadn't have done what you did with Israel and given Israel the impetus and the status that it got during the Trump camp in regards to Abraham Accords and shifting capitals and acknowledging Western Sahara and Morocco and all these things, you know, perhaps the October 7th events wouldn't have happened, because I link the two. You know, I think when you go back to and look at the bigger picture, I think October the 7th was a huge circuit breaker flipping for the Palestinians. And part of that was that they got sold down the river with the Abraham Accords by everybody, including the Arabs. You know, so I think he's in a pickle. And I bought in myself to his proposal months ago, or wherever it was, years ago, that he would solve the Ukraine war in a day, because he would just turn up and say, right, you're not having any more money. It's the end of US funding. And that more or less would be the silver bullet. But it's actually a bit more complicated than that. And I think what we will see in reality is that he will pull off a ceasefire in his first week in office. But taking it further from that is going to be very, very difficult, because there are a whole bag of complications there which weren't there initially when he made those statements. One of which has just been mentioned by George is J.D. Vance, who doesn't give a hoot about Ukraine, but is sexing up the rhetoric now towards Taiwan and China. And so that complicates things even further with Russia signing any sort of a peace deal in Ukraine. You know, there's lots and lots of nuances now.
Well, that's always the caveat that we mention on this program. And you can have as many ideas and proposals as you want, but if Russia isn't at the table, even, then it's just exercise in futility. George, you and I have pointed out in the past, and maybe it's a immaterial detail, but Trump has said, you know, he wants this resolved before he is inaugurated. It's kind of interesting to me, and maybe it's a reach, but I've always felt that it was a mistake on the part of his movement is just to call this Biden's war. He distanced himself from it, and he doesn't want this war on his watch. He has a lot of other things he wants to do. But maybe that's just a reach and reading into something that isn't there. Thoughts?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, it was famously, I think, Daniel Patrick Moynihan told Richard Nixon just as he was taking office in January 1969 that unless you bring this war in Vietnam to an end, in no time at all, this will be known as Nixon's war. Mm. Up until then, it had been Johnson's war. Now it's going to be Nixon's war. And that's, in fact, what happened. Nixon wasn't able to bring this war to an immediate conclusion. And, of course, he then got blamed for the war. And I think Trump, consciously or unconsciously, is thinking along those lines, that in no time at all, and the Democrats, who are very, very good at political marketing, will say, hey, this is Trump's war. Trump has made a hash of this. Trump promised that he would bring this to an end. He hasn't brought it to an end. It's actually even worse than it was. It's Trump's war. So he wants to get this off his plate, but it's easier said than done. Now, the issue, there are suggestions of this from in the past, and there are suggestions of this from this Fred Flights and Keith Kellogg, who wrote this paper for the American First Policy Institute, that, well, what they're going to do is go to Zelensky and say, well, unless you show up for a peace conference with Russia, we're going to cut off your assistance. And then they go to the Russians and say, well, unless you show up to this conference and clearly indicate that you want to end this war, we're going to double our assistance to Ukraine. So they think that they're being very cute. But then even if this happens, even if, and that's a possibility that they get this conference going, and that's probably, and Zelensky, I think, realizes that the days of these peace conferences without Russia are over. I think if Trump will insist that if we have a conference and Russia has to attend, but even if that happens, then where do we go from here? Yeah, he may want to put a ceasefire in place, But what would be the point of that? The one selling point that I think Trump has, which is an advantage from Biden, is that he doesn't care about NATO. And so that whole issue of, open door to NATO for Ukraine, every country has a right to decide on joining NATO. But Trump doesn't care about that. So that at least could be
All the more so, George, I'll throw it to Martin right now. NATO is going to do whatever the U.S. wants at the end of the day. At the end of the day, that's what's going to be. They can have all of their PR and their complaining and Trump-proofing and all that. But once the word is out from Washington, NATO will follow. But that doesn't make things simple. Go ahead, Martin.
No, I mean, will NATO even be around? Plenty of pretty smart people, certainly much smarter people than me, who follow these events are now writing op-eds. Saying that NATO is on a self-destruction course. And I think, I don't think Trump would have any problem in going down in history being the catalyst who brought that about. The problem Trump's got is that whichever way he moves, he's going to come full-on collision with Europe. And there are just so many signals now that the Americans are heading towards a trade war with Europe. Trump and Vance now want to hike up tariffs with China. In fact, on a whole load of goods right across the world, not only with China, but with the Europeans as well. And it's there, the wiggle room there. Does he have the leverage there? You said that, America basically is NATO. NATO is America. If he has a massive tantrum and says to Zelensky, look, you're not only having no more aid from America, you're having no more aid from NATO and even the big players individually in Europe. That could be a huge game changer. That could be... pretty amazing. That could stop everything and get people to focus minds. But in those articles that I think you were referring to about the meetings or the phone call, between Zelensky and Trump, there were a couple of little tiny details that a journalist floated. And one of them was the four key regions, which are under dispute and whether Zelensky would give them up. It's written that this is out of the question. That Zelensky in no way could give those regions up, which then throws the spotlight back on Zelensky and how he can overnight, in my view, go from being a friend to a foe with Trump. And Trump's reaction to that will simply be, well, you are the problem now, so you have to go. And the problem that Zelensky's got, of course, is that his legitimacy, you mentioned earlier that he's not the president anymore. How much longer can that go on for? When you have these international peace conferences and where Russia would be...
I'm going to jump in here. We're showing our viewers very clearly how problematic Trump's promise is. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump and Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns. I'm Peter LaBelle. Here, we're discussing some real news. Okay, George, let me throw it back to you. Trump was impeached over Ukraine. I think that we should remember that, okay? Martin, looks at it with a very sober mind. But Biden's entire Ukraine policy has not been sober. It's been extremely reckless. And people are attached to this. It's Pax Americana. It is maintaining hegemony. The effort to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia is just as real now as it was 4 years ago, George.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's where the problems are going to arise for Trump, because the Republican Party, along with the Democrats, supports this war. And I mean, by the Republican Party, a big, large proportion of it. When that $61 billion package for Ukraine was passed a few weeks ago, the Senate Republicans, half the congressional Republicans supported it. So that's really Trump's problem, that if he does go down this path, if he decides to bite the bullet and goes along and says, well, this war in Ukraine, it makes no sense. I think it makes no sense for us to wage war against Russia. We need Russia as an ally against China, which I think probably is what he really thinks, even though that's been consistently thinking that since 2016. So therefore, this has nothing to do with our interests. Let's just bring it to an end. He is going to come into conflict immediately with the congressional Republicans, and they are very unhappy about it because they're the ones who are now saying we need to give Ukraine everything it needs to get the job done to defeat Russia. So ultimately, he's going to have to confront this problem that his own party is deeply divided on this issue. And of course, let's remember his own speaker, you know, MAGA Mike, that he dubs, you know, Mike Johnson. He's the one who pushed that $61 billion package for Ukraine. So he's got to keep him happy. So it's going to be very difficult for him. And you mentioned about the impeachment. Yeah, that's a real possibility. I mean, all these people like Lindsey Graham and Michael McCall and all the rest of them, they're not just going to sit still and watch Ukraine as they see it. Oh, Ukraine's being sold down the river. We're giving Putin everything he wants.
George, we see the Russiagate rearing its ugly head again. They'll Russiagate him again. Okay, this is already in the mix right now. Martin, you know, it's interesting when we, when Mike Pompeo, he actually spoke at the convention, trying to take on or appropriate to himself what America First is, which is in complete diametrically opposed to what someone like Trump and from what we know of Vance. But there are other people around, John Radcliffe, Robert O'Brien, Rick Grenell. I don't see them going along with the Trump-Vance vision here. I mean, we can say there's just going to be congressional resistance, but even within his administration, if he's thinking about Mike Pompeo or Marco Rubio, I would think that the impeachment process would be set up in January.
He's got some problems. He definitely has some problems, which he couldn't have possibly thought of, envisioned earlier on when he made these really oversimplistic statements about Ukraine. Ukraine isn't going to be resolved in a day or a week or I think in months. I think it's going to be a long-standing issue, a thorn in the side of Trump and his new administration. Yep. What was interesting for me about the conference is the three Brits who turned up, Nigel Farage, Liz Truss, and Boris Johnson. And what really shocked me, and I really did, my jaw just literally fell ajar. I could not believe, Peter, how much time Trump gave to Boris Johnson. And Boris Johnson really milked this with the British press. There's long articles in The Independent saying basically that Boris Johnson is more or less convinced Trump that he needs to continue the campaign with Ukraine against Russia. And the fact that it even gets press coverage, the fact that Boris Johnson got the time to talk to him, it gives you an indication that he's not quite so gung-ho and quite so binary now on Ukraine as he was before. He's prepared to work with other people around the world who are very close to Ukrainians. Boris Johnson has got to be on Zelensky's payroll. He has to be. It's ridiculous. You know, how can you hide this anymore? He's just jetting around the world, just basically, you know, promoting Ukraine and Zelensky.
He's not the only one.
But and where's this all going to end? You know, and I think it could go either way, but we might be surprised. We might be surprised by actually Trump reaching out more to his EU allies, you know, onto how to find a diplomatic solution, which gives him still the grace and the international prestige that he needs. The weirdest thing about the whole thing of Ukraine for me is you have this relationship between Trump and Putin, and one has to ask the obvious question, what's it based on? Is it based on Trump wanting to do huge business in the countries that Putin has a real control over, real estate, whatever? Or is it just an aberration? Or is it even maybe the Russian Secret Service have got all sorts of things on Trump that he's worried about? It's really amusing how this continues, but I just don't see how Trump...
I think, George, it's kind of more common sense. I mean, why should the United States and Russia be enemies? Why? George.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, instinctively, Trump understood that when the Cold War came to an end, and he thought that, what's this beef about? I don't think that there's any real relationship between Trump and Russia. I think, as the late Stephen Cohen used to point out, you know, Trump is actually one of the few kind of leading businessmen in the United States who hasn't made a lot of money in Russia. I mean, I think, you know, he's talked about various projects, building a Trump Tower, but he's never really pulled that off. I think that he does see Russia as a potential ally against China. He believes, and Vance believes, that China is the looming threat, and they have to mobilize the alliance to the extent that it's still worth having. You have to mobilize it against China. I mean, I think he would like to downgrade the Europeans. Says, well, okay, we will contain Russia, but you do that. That's your task. That's what you need to focus on. We will focus on China. So we will reorient ourselves to contain China in Asia. I think that's what he would like. Ukraine is just a sort of a mess here, which, it has to be resolved. But, if one thinks of, Viktor Orban and so Boris Johnson. So, Orban goes to Trump and says, yeah, Trump told me he's going to bring this to an end. I'm full of confidence that, he knows how to do it. He's going to bring it to an end. And then Boris Johnson says, yeah, I'm absolutely confident, Trump knows what to do with Ukraine. So what does that tell us? It tells us that Trump just simply tells his interlocutors what they want to hear. Orban doesn't hear that the war is going to come to an end, and he intends to bring it to an end by the time he's inaugurated. Boris Johnson says, yeah, Trump's a good guy. Trump is with us on NATO. He's going to...
The problem is he may disappoint everyone.
I think that's right, yeah.
So we've talked about what Boris Johnson thinks and J.D. Vance and maybe what Trump's in thinking about and thought about. Why should the Russians care about any of this conversation?
Yeah, that's a very good point. But I think that if you look at the ideology of Putin and you go back long enough, when there was a possibility of Russia and the European Union and America coming closer together, and even Russia becoming part of NATO, I think his ideology, his raw ideology, is that Russia should be part of the West. It should be integrating more. So from a business point of view, from a geopolitical point of view, and from a peace point of view, I don't believe Putin is a warmonger. I know there are so many people in the UK who are going to slaughter me on social media for that, but I just don't buy it. I never thought Putin...
But don't you think, Martin, there's the antecedents to all of this. If you look at it at a distance, Putin was very kind of much of a liberal when he started out, and it's changed. Why? Because the West is a club and Russia's not invited. So, I mean, what do you do if you're not invited? Okay, you have to go your own way.
Yeah, but I think Putin wants to, I think Trump.
I think those days are way long gone, gone. George, we even had the foreign minister Lavrov, he was saying, and actually it was something I said to you, when the conflict in Ukraine started, this is going to be a breach covering a generations, George.
Yes, I think that's right. I do think, though, that the Russians would like that to return to some kind of normality, normal relations. But
trade.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not. It isn't going to happen anytime, really, in the foreseeable future. And I think that's because what Europe has decided to do. Europe has decided to mobilize itself, mobilize that entire kind of European continent against Russia. It's done it without any real concern for its own interests, but it is mobilized, and it's now going to be very, very difficult after all that has happened, after all, sending all this military assistance in order to kill Russians. It's going to be very difficult to say, well, okay, we didn't really mean it. Let's go back to the good old days of what good old days would be Helmut Kohl and Boris Yeltsin or Angela Merkel and the young Putin. It just isn't going to happen. And I think that there may be some ideas, hopes among the Russians that maybe we can do that, but that's just not all.
Martin, finish it up. Well, last 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I think the takeaway now for me for the last few days, looking at all these huge events, is the horrific news from Brussels that Ursula von der Leyen is now going to have another 5 years in power. What does that tell you about how
that's a European solution to a European problem. Good luck.
And she's already banging her fist on the table and talking about, getting more gung-ho with China. and pouring more bad money after good money into the Ukraine black hole. You know, so many people have said to me on social media, this is fantastic news because it means in the long term there's going to be some sort of revolution in EU countries and much, much more. You know, we're stuck with that, unfortunately. But corruption rules.
Europe is stuck, and we'll see if the Republican Party is stuck. And we heard a lot of good things, but a lot of bad people still hanging around. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and Marrakesh. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching you. I'll see you at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.